Chapter 2. 10-pound Poms. The sea was too impossibly green, the sky absurdly blue, the lighthouse too glowingly white. Stephen and Bridget are standing, backs to the sea, staring at the lighthouse. The first time Stephen saw it a few years before was in a poster in a travel agent's window in Cambridge. "Australia, land of tomorrow," it proclaimed. £10 could take you to Australia. The light was already fading on that dingy Cambridge street. The sandstone buildings of the colleges were stained with grime, and the whole town hadn't had a coat of paint since before the war. The poster glowed like the sun. It was the end of summer, heading into autumn. The street would soon be dark at 4:30 in the afternoon. Lights on in the shops and houses. No wonder the poster glowed so invitingly, saying, "Step inside." And now they stand here, as though indeed they have stepped through the poster and out the other side, only to find the sea more grey than green, the sky overcast, and rust staining the white paint of the lighthouse, as if it too hadn't seen a coat of paint since before the war. Stephen had actually asked about the lighthouse in the poster at the travel agent's. Called Australia House in London. Was it based on anything? Did it exist? If so, where? And his questions led to this seaside town, where they've lived for almost a year now. Of course, neither of them ever took the poster for real. It clearly wasn't. It wasn't selling the truth. It was selling dreams. And, like a salesman falling for another salesman's pitch, they bought the thing knowingly. Like Pascal believing in God. A hunch. A wager. Why not? At least there was a sea trip, even if it was a one-way ticket. And so here they are, 10-pound Poms, drawn to the lighthouse like moths to the candle, with their eyes wide open. Like someone going to a place because a book has brought it alive for them, only to find upon arrival that the place was always doomed to disappoint. Better left in the book. All pictures, whether made of paint or words, make impossible promises, Stephen thinks. Even lie. But as much as you might tell yourself that, sometimes you choose the lie anyway, hoping that with time you can improve upon the lie and turn it into something that, if not wholly true, is true enough. A bit like falling in love with love before the rose colour fades from your vision and you realise you're not in love at all, but stay on anyway. Like two lovers settling for second best, something they can live with well enough. Is that what they've been doing for the last year or so? Stephen shrugs, turning away from this jumble of thoughts, and looks round to Bridget.
If this is tomorrow, I'm ready for yesterday.
Bridget is squinting out over the bay to the Rip, a troubled look in her eyes.
That's the South Pole down there.
Her voice is vague but puzzled, and she says this as if she were peering down into some bottomless dark well. On the edge of the abyss, of the void itself, that yawning chasm always there just beneath our everyday feet, as if she might fall down any second, and never be heard of or sighted again. She turns and looks over the town. Pretty little seaside town. Once grand hotels, run-down mansions and matchstick cottages, all perched on the abyss. The last frontier. And fragile, as if an Antarctic blast might blow it all away any minute. The land simply suffering the houses for now, as if about to shrug them off at any moment. The place unnerves her. Has, from the start, something unreal about the whole thing. They'd stepped through the poster and emerged on the other side, into an imitation toy town, a replica of what they left behind, of the old world. And a people desperate for you to like what you see, to like them, desperate for approval. Smiling, accommodating, but all the time the nasty side never far away if you don't give them what they want. And, as they've already discovered, to some in the town, they haven't.